Monday morning you showed the fight. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to another episode of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Week one is upon us, pretty much in the books, except for two Monday night games, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. But I've got a full recap of week one through the first 14 games. We're talking close comebacks, but falling just short in a lot of these games. That's kind of the theme of our show. And we're going to kick off today's week one episode with the two defending conference champions, the Denver Broncos, one of those teams that almost had a comeback against them, Indianapolis Colts, making a ferocious comeback in that Sunday night affair, falling just short, losing by a touchdown. And then we will get into the Seattle Seahawks, who didn't have to starve off a Green Bay Packer comeback. They pretty much dominated the whole way and got stronger as the game went on. In the second segment of our show, we will get into those near comeback games. Cleveland almost coming back in Pittsburgh. The Bears almost coming back at home against the Buffalo Bills. The Bills completing the upset in overtime. And then another home team that I thought was going to win, favored at home against a division rival, came back, took the lead, but ended up coughing it up really shortly after taking the lead. That was the Bengals. That was the Ravens coughing up the lead and the Bengals holding off the Ravens' comeback. Then in our fourth and long segment, we will talk Kansas City Chiefs, Matt Ryan having a huge game for the Atlanta Falcons, and the Philadelphia Eagles, actually one of the teams completing a Sunday comeback, trailing early to the Jaguars, trailing 17-0, but coming back to win 34-17. We'll end our fourth and long segment with the NFL and the NFLPA trying to come to an agreement on a new drug policy for the NFL. I have just some brief comments about that. But let's get into Sunday Night Football. The Denver Broncos look great early. I thought we were going to have to make some comparisons to how great the Broncos looked and how great the Seahawks looked in their two games, coincidentally both on NBC this weekend, with the Seahawks kicking off the weekend on Thursday against the Packers and the Broncos Sunday night with Peyton Manning taking on his old team, the Indianapolis Colts. Early on, Denver proved, kind of proving me right and proving everybody else right who's picking Denver to be the AFC favorite, and they just barely held on against the Colts. They scored 24 points in the first half, just one touchdown in the second half. Manning, three throwing touchdowns, all came in the first half, coincidentally, all three of them to Julius Thomas. Emmanuel Sanders was heavily involved in this game. I felt like he was going to be involved, replacing Wes Welker in the slot. Some people speculated that maybe there's just too much for Sanders to learn in such a short amount of time. He's in a new offense. He was trying to learn to play opposite of Demaryius Thomas in the starting rotation and in the Eric Decker spot, if you will. And just about 2 weeks ago, you wanted to fill him in now in Wes Welker's spot. That is kind of the more natural spot to me. You have Sanders filling in for Wes Welker, but he has more speed than Wes Welker, which actually leads them to be a better offense in my mind. Not that Peyton Manning didn't miss Wes Welker on this night. In the first red zone trip, the first trip inside the 10-yard line, I felt that Manning would have liked to have Welker out there on the field. If you remember in last year's first game against the Ravens on Thursday Night Football, he found Wes Welker on short touchdown passes inside the 10-yard line. That was something that I think he missed with Welker not being there on Sunday night. But Julius Thomas kind of took over that role. He had seven catches for 104 yards, three touchdowns. Demaryius Thomas, kind of quiet in this game. He only had four catches, one memorable play where it was, you know, classic Demaryius Thomas with him catching a screen pass and doing the rest of the work, picking up a couple of blocks and getting down to the 3-yard line with Monte Ball finishing off that scoring drive. And Sanders, like I said, I thought he filled in very wonderfully for Welker in the slot. 6 catches, 77 yards. As great as the Broncos were in the first half, though, really struggled in the second half. They got the ball to start the half. The offense stalled, though, on an offensive holding, put them back in the down and distance to start that drive, and they ended up 3-and-out punt. Andrew Luck immediately went down the field, got the ball to the 1-yard line, 4th-and-1. Luck tries to quick snap it and sneak it into the end zone to no avail, so the Broncos escape that scoring threat. And more time is wasted off the clock, and eventually the Colts get a field goal. But at that point, it kind of felt like the air was out of the balloon for the Colts. I mean, they had their shot to get back in this one. They went for it on 4th-and-1 at the Broncos' 1-yard line and missed. So that was a huge missed opportunity, and you thought that maybe that would be all for the Colts. But Andrew Luck kept fighting back, and it really was a story of missed opportunities for them on this night. I already mentioned the Luck run trying to get in on the 4th-and-goal. Julius Thomas later on in the second half fumbled, but the Broncos were able to recover it. And that later on, that drive was the same drive that Demaryius Thomas had his nice screen catch, and then Monte Ball finishing off the drive on a touchdown. An onside kick was recovered by the Colts. They were able to take advantage of that opportunity, scoring a touchdown later on that drive. Ironically, Julius Thomas was the guy that was in position to catch the onside kick for the Broncos, but he wasn't able to haul it in. But overall, what is alarming to me about this near comeback for the Colts, if you're the Denver Broncos, is their inability to run the ball. Now, I know that offense last year was heavy pass, scoring lots of points with Peyton Manning chucking it to Demaryius Thomas, Julius Thomas, Eric Decker, Wes Welker, and company. But Monte Ball is filling in for Knowshon Moreno this season, who rushed for 1,000 yards last year. I mean, we all remember Knowshon Moreno's Sunday night performance against the Patriots last season of like 236 yards or something like that. I pulled that number out of my head. I don't know if it was exactly that, 230, 250 yards, something like that. It was incredible. I mean, Monte Ball has big shoes to fill here. And not that he can't. He has the skills to do it. But he didn't do it effectively enough on Sunday night. The Broncos kept feeding him the ball, which is great news to Ball's fantasy owners. 23 carries, only 2 running backs got more carries than Ball on Sunday. Actually, through the first week, including Thursday's game. Only 2 running backs had more than 23 carries, which is what Bell got. But in those carries, 67 yards, 1 touchdown. That's 2.9 yards per carry. That's not getting it done. Especially when you're up 24-0, 24-7 in the second half, and you're trying to sit on this lead, which is what the Broncos tried to do. They basically changed their style of play from last year. Rather than trying to outscore people with Peyton Manning, they took the air out of the ball, tried to play some defense, and run the clock out. That doesn't work when you're averaging less than 3 yards per rush. For the Colts going forward, it's tough to read whether they can indeed take that next step and be a serious contender in the AFC. I know that lots of people are calling them a serious contender, and the way the Patriots played on Sunday, some people are probably putting them ahead of New England already and making them one of the top 2 seeds along with Denver. It's tough to tell. I'm not going to make a ruling on Indianapolis yet. I mean, obviously on the road to start the season in Denver, very difficult. But to me, they didn't solve any of their problems from last year. Their defense didn't play well. They were able to hold Demaryius Thomas to only 4 catches. Other than that, nothing else jumps out at me as something that they did well on defense. And Trent Richardson's still not running the ball well. He didn't have a lot of opportunities. Only 6 carries and rushed for 20 yards. That's an average of 3.3. So that's not really getting it done. Better than Monte Ball, but still not really getting it done. You can't really tell on six carries, but as a team, the Colts only had 14 carries for, you know, a minimum amount of yardage. In order for them to be an effective offense and go to the next level, Andrew Luck can't throw the ball 53 times in a game, which is what he did, completing 35 of those attempts, but still, 370 yards for him. That's second among quarterbacks this week so far. Two touchdowns, two interceptions, which ended up being costly. The two picks were by Raheem Moore. He made those interceptions off tip passes. Flipping back to the Broncos here for a second, they played well on defense, and I liked that they tried to change their philosophy, because Manning has not had much success when he is asked to outscore every single opponent. That has proven time and time again that wins in the regular season, but not in the playoffs. So I admire John Fox and John Elway, really, for reconstructing this team to win a different way. But again, if you're going to win this way, you have to run the ball effectively, and you have to get a pass rush on defense, which they pretty much didn't do very well in the second half, getting to Andrew Luck as he got them back in the game, and which is questionable, which you have to be concerned with if you're the Broncos, because you had a 24-0 lead, 24-7 lead in the second half, where guys like DeMarcus Ware can tee off and just pass rush because Luck is dropping back 54 times. But yet they weren't able to get an effective enough pass rush to slow down the Colts offense. That was our Sunday night wrap-up of the Broncos defeating the Colts 31-24. We're going to go to the Seattle Seahawks and their dominance of the Green Bay Packers. Their dominance really was over in an entire game. And the scary thing that I took away from the Seahawks' victory was what I'm calling the Percy Harvin effect. I wrote an article on this for the Sports Network this week, and with a fantasy spin, of course. But with Harvin in the lineup, you know, the analysts have said this. They said it last year, and they've said it this offseason as well, that the Seahawks can be better because Harvin is back this season. He caught just one pass in the regular season last year. I have to completely agree after watching him on Thursday night, and I'm sorry for you Seahawk fans or for you analysts that have been saying it all offseason that I'm late to the party on this. But Harvin completely changes that offense. Didn't light it up on the stat sheet. I mean, fantasy owners aren't going to walk away and just weren't amazed by what Harvin did on Thursday. At 7 catches, 59 yards, 4 carries for 41 yards. So close to 10 points, a very respectable number in non-PPR leagues. Plus, if you're in a league with kickoff return points, he got those as well. But what he does, his presence on the field completely changes what Darrell Bevell can call on offense for the Seahawks, the offensive coordinator for Seattle. He runs the jet sweep up the sidelines. He can run the jet sweep, run up the sideline without the ball. Kind of, you know, it's in a way a run option for the Seahawks. And when you get Marshawn Lynch going, which against the Packer defense wasn't particularly difficult, Lynch 20 carries, 110 yards in the game, also scoring 2 touchdowns. You get him established, then mix in a couple jet sweeps for big gains. Then you're mixing and matching both, and then you end up running plays like they did in the middle of that contest with Russell Wilson faking the run option. The Packers defense thinks it is a classic quarterback option with Russell Wilson running out of the pocket. He begins to run out of the pocket and then finds an open receiver for a screen pass. Boom, one missed tackle, touchdown Seattle. That is what they can do this year that they weren't able to do as much of last year because Harvin was out. As scary as this sounds, the Seahawks might be better this year. It'll be hard for them to repeat what they did on defense. Don't get me wrong. That is true. But if they're able to be even in the ballpark or even close to what they were on defense last year, which they can be with who they've got coming back, they will be more efficient, score more points on offense, and as a team, be better, which is scary based on how good they were last year, blowing out the Broncos by 35 points in the Super Bowl. From the Packers' perspective, you know, watching the game, it felt like Seattle was being a little bit arrogant. They don't mix and match their cornerbacks. Byron Maxwell and Richard Sherman line up on the same side of the field the entire game. They don't shadow a certain wide receiver. And Green Bay was trying to maximize that opportunity in having Jordy Nelson lined up with Byron Maxwell, the second best cornerback for Seattle, and not throwing in Sherman's direction at all, which was pretty amazing how effective Sherman was at shutting down his side of the field. The Packers were scared to go to one side of that of the field where Sherman was. But in the end, that ended up actually hurting the Seahawks, and it'll be interesting to see if anybody else deploys that strategy, because the Packers and Aaron Rodgers weren't really able to establish Jordy Nelson. He did end up having a significant amount of receiving yards, but Maxwell made a key interception in the third quarter that really turned the tide of the game. And without Eddie Lacy, who left with a concussion, Aaron Rodgers just had to do too much to overcome what Seattle was doing on offense and defense. Lacy, by the way, wasn't all that effective even when he was in the game. He rushed 12 times for 34 yards. As a team, the Packers rushed 21 times for 80 yards, average of 3.8 yards per carry, and they did get a rushing touchdown. Rodgers finished 23 of 33, 189 yards for a touchdown, and that one pick that I mentioned. Similar to the Colts, you know, the Packers opened up on the road against the defending Super Bowl champions. So, of course, it's one game. It's hard to really tell or gauge where this team is going. I do, however, firmly believe this team is a lot closer to 9 wins or 10 wins this season than, say, 12 or 13, which I believe a lot of people thought they were going to be in that neighborhood. I cap their win total at 10, maybe 11, and that is all based on the health of Aaron Rodgers. I guess the Broncos' record is based all on Peyton Manning's health, but Rodgers' much more possibility of him getting injured. And this is the reason why I cap them at that 10, 9, 11 win total. It's their defense. Their defense does not look like a playoff caliber team. I know they tried to reconstruct it this season, this offseason. They drafted HaHa Clinton Dix, who had a rough first game as a rookie, missed several tackles. But it's very obvious that Clay Matthews is the only star they have on defense, and he is routinely, at least on Thursday, was routinely out of position trying to take risks to make up for the inefficiencies on other parts of the Packer offense. The Packer defense. And on offense, you have to start to be concerned about the health of Eddie Lacy, getting two concussions now in two seasons. As we continue to learn more and more about concussions, you have to be concerned about his long-term health. And Rodgers, as I said before, cannot carry this team on his own. As great as he is, an MVP caliber quarterback every single season, the Packers have to surround him with quality talent on both sides of the ball. It's time that we admit the Packers are a below average defense, borderline bad defensive team. And that, to me, will not get them in the playoffs. One thing they have going for them, their biggest rival in winning the division, Chicago Bears, lost at home to the Buffalo Bills on Sunday. We'll see how Detroit does on Monday night. Minnesota got a big win against St. Louis. Now, I'm not putting Minnesota as the division favorite already, but you never know. We'll see going forward how Green Bay does at home, how Green Bay does against not the defending Super Bowl champion. But I was not impressed at all with what Green Bay was able to do against Seattle. Again, Super Bowl champs, but thought they would have a better showing. All right, we're going to take our first break of the show. When we come back, we're talking near comebacks, leading off with the Cleveland Browns in Pittsburgh. When I wake up, well, I know I'm going to be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm going to be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm going to be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I heave up, welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Don't forget, we want to hear from you. What do you think of the show? Do you have a comment about what I've said so far about the Broncos and Seahawks or the Colts and Packers? Give me a tweet, DM, HOLCOMB, or send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. Moving on to our near comeback segment, starting in Pittsburgh at Heinz Field. The Steelers jumped out to a 27-3 lead by halftime. Big Ben set a half record in his career. By the way, Big Ben already in his 10th season. I guess I can't say already. I mean, a decade in the league just seems like it flew by. But in his 10th season, had the best half of his career, at least passing yards-wise, in the first half on Sunday. 278 passing yards. Just like Manning and the Broncos, I don't know what happened, but it disappeared. The offense disappeared, and it was even worse than what happened in Denver. The Broncos were able to score one touchdown and win by seven. The Browns were able to come all the way back and tie the game, only for Pittsburgh to score a field goal on the last play of the game, the only points the Steelers were able to muster up in the second half. So, one thing that I will say about maybe an excuse for Pittsburgh was Cleveland started with the ball in the second half. And I don't know what speech Mike Pettine said to the Browns, but they came out firing on all cylinders using the no-huddle offense that the Steelers used in the first half and marched all the way down the field, didn't have Ben Tate because he left with an injury, and rookie Terrence West and Isaiah Cromwell took over the rushing attack for the Browns. The Steelers' rush defense looked atrocious. West had 16 carries for 100 yards. That's average of 6.3. Cromwell only carried the ball five times for 32 yards and scored twice. So both of those guys went off during the Browns' comeback. All three backs, including Ben Tate, were able to average over 6 yards per carry. As a team, the Browns rushed 30 times, 183 yards. Not getting it done for the Steelers. We talked about the Broncos not being able to hold on to the lead because they couldn't run the ball. The Steelers, exact opposite. They let the Browns back in the game because they couldn't stop the run, which is incredible that the Browns stuck with the run down by 24 points. But with so much time and how quickly they were scoring, they were able to do that. And at the point where they got their rushing attack going, that is where the play-action pass really opened up for Brian Hoyer. And as much as I've criticized Mike Pettine this offseason for the circus that has surrounded Johnny Manziel and the Cleveland Brown organization, he did the right thing in not playing Johnny Manziel. Even with his team down by 24 points, he stuck with Brian Hoyer. And maybe my opinion of Hoyer will change in a week or two or three. Maybe by then Manziel should be starting or will be starting. But at this point, I've said this and I'm sticking to it. Hoyer needs to be given a legitimate chance to show what he can do and see what he can do as the starter in Cleveland. Putting him out there for a half, it doesn't show you completely what he can do. Now, because you let him play in the second half, with no leash, no Johnny Manziel coming in and spelling him and messing up his rhythm, You saw what Hoyer can do with an effective running game, and he was able to bring the Browns all the way back to almost win against a division rival on the road. Pretty impressive there. Hoyer finished 19 for 31, 230 yards, and a touchdown. Johnny Manziel again on the sideline the entire game. All that talk about a two-quarterback system, saying that at some point Manziel will play on Sunday against the Steelers. All a bluff, and you know what? Kind of genius by Mike Pettine, because Dick LeBeau and the Steelers had to prepare for him. Maybe they spent more time on Manziel rather than trying to stop a simple running play by Terrence West. And, you know, never know. Maybe that helped out the Browns in the end. The Steelers stars played very well in the first half to get that 27-3 lead. I want to mention their stats for our fantasy lovers out there. Le'Veon Bell, 21 carries, 109 yards on the day, and a touchdown, plus 6 catches, 88 yards through the air. Pretty clear that Bell is going to be that workhorse back. Some people were worried LeGarrette Blount is going to come in and take some carries or touches away from Bell. He took one goal line carry away. Blount actually scored a touchdown, but if you're a fantasy owner of Bell, you cannot at all be upset with 109 yards. You know, overall, 200 yards of offense there from the Steelers running back. Antonio Brown, 5 catches, 116 yards, and a touchdown. Nice punt return as well. Didn't really like the drop kick, if that's what you want to call it. I don't understand why he's trying to run around the punter. Or why he's trying to run through the punter. Run around the punter. You're Antonio Brown. You have the cutting ability to get around the Browns punter. Instead, you choose to drop kick him, receive a 15-yard penalty on top of not scoring on that play. Steelers also have to be pleased with new receivers Justin Brown and Marcus Wheaton making some key catches down the stretch. Wheaton, 6 catches on the day, 97 yards. He caught 6 of his 7 targets. Big Ben finished 3rd in passing yards this week. 23 of 34, 365 yards through the ground. Again, 278 was in the first half, so quite stagnant in the second half was the Steelers' offense. A touchdown and an interception for Big Ben as well. The key takeaway for the Steelers, again, they want to be an elite team in the AFC again. They want to be a serious contender against Denver and Indianapolis and New England this season. Gotta stop the run. Gotta. Even in the passing era we are in the NFL, you cannot give up 180 yards to the Cleveland Browns and expect to win. Chicago Bears at home nearly came back against the Buffalo Bills on Sunday. EJ Manuel helped the Bills get out to a 17-7 lead. He finished 16 of 23, rushed for a touchdown. CJ Spiller, a lot of people were wondering if he would be the focal point of the Bills' rushing attack. He was, 15 carries for 53 yards, but the old veteran, Fred Jackson, 7 carries and had more yards than Spiller, 61 yards, and Jackson getting the important carries in overtime and getting a long run to set up the game-winning field goal. Jay Cutler threw 2 touchdowns, but also threw 2 picks, kind of typical of him. Seems like that's your typical Jay Cutler game, throwing for a bunch of yards and touchdowns, but also turning the ball over a couple of times. The Bears made major upgrades, what were supposed to be major upgrades anyway, on their D-line over the offseason. But again, on Sunday, the problems were on defense and stopping the run. Same as the Steelers. It was worse than the Steelers. 193 yards on the ground for the Bills. They only sacked Manuel 1 time. So I'm curious to hear from Chicago Bear fans. I know there's a lot on the site. In particular, my partner on the I-80 Sports Talk, Tom Pollan, what he thought of the Bears' first game against the Bills. That was a popular pick in Survivor Leagues this week. My cousin had the Bears going, and he was knocked out. Luckily, I was able to advance with the Philadelphia Eagles, which we will get to their game in our next segment. But the Bills, big win on the road for them. They're 1-0. Bears dropping one that they should have had at home. They're 0-1. The last game here in this second segment of the near comebacks at home, the Baltimore Ravens, I had them winning over the Cincinnati Bengals. Andy Dalton came into the game 2-7 in his career against division opponents on the road. Didn't think he had it in him to beat this Ravens team. I felt Baltimore made the necessary improvements to be a contender again this season in the AFC North, and now I'm starting to doubt that pick already. Dalton and the Bengals really struggled to convert drives into touchdowns in the first half. They had to settle for 5 field goals. Luckily, Mike Nugent was on his game. He converted all 5 attempts. And Joe Flacco, not on his game at the end of the first half. The Ravens were in field goal position with the ball. 8 seconds left on the clock. Joe Flacco can't find a receiver. Doesn't throw it away. Doesn't run out of bounds, but runs around and then realizes, oh, I got to get rid of the ball. And then throws an incomplete pass as time expires. No field goal attempt. The Ravens go into halftime down 15-0 rather than 15-3. It got even worse for the Ravens as the game went along. Their rushing attack was pretty much non-existent with Bernard Pierce, a guy that was supposed to step in, not only be productive while Ray Rice was out, but possibly take over the starting position for Ray Rice. He proved that he can do that. He didn't prove that at all. I wouldn't be surprised if Pierce doesn't start again next week, even with Ray Rice out again. Justin Forsett came in, 11 carries, 70 yards for him, and a touchdown. Pierce, 6 carries, abysmal 14 yards, and a fumble. The fumble just icing on the cake. Fantasy owners, if you started Bernard Pierce, you got negative points. Drop him in your league. Flacco to Steve Smith was the one positive big play besides Justin Forsett probably for the Ravens in this game. 80-yard strike to the veteran receiver gave the Ravens the lead, 16-15. But Dalton, almost immediately after that play on the next series, 77-yard strike to A.J. Green. The Bengals go back ahead, and they hold on to win 23-16. We can talk all we want about the Ravens and their inability to run the ball or their ridiculous amount of passes in this game. Joe Flacco attempting 62 passes. Are you kidding me? Even if you have Bernard Pierce in the backfield, 62 passes with Joe Flacco? I've been down this road before with the Ravens offense and offensive coordinator Cam Cameron, who's not there anymore. He's in LSU. But I, as I said, we can go on and on about that. But I want to concentrate on the positive for the Bengals. It wasn't a pretty game from them. It wasn't a pretty game for the Broncos or the Steelers, and they ended up winning. But the fact that Dalton went in to a stadium that he struggled in, a division opponent on the road where he's only won 2 out of 9 times in his career on the road in division games, and winning this one, pulling it out in an ugly style, is positive for the young quarterback in a season that could be a make or break for his career, at least with the Cincinnati Bengals. For the Ravens, concentrating on next week for them, they have a very short week. They play the Pittsburgh Steelers on Thursday at home. It's already a must win pretty much for them. They cannot start the season 0-2 while starting 0-2 in the division against the two teams that they're going to be chasing, and then also start 0-2 at home. Of course, a must-win week 2 is a ridiculous statement, but it is as close to a must-win in week 2 as you're going to get for the Baltimore Ravens. That does it for our second segment here on the show. Once again, I want to hear what you think. Tweet at me, DM, HOLCOMB. Send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Dave's Football news. We're going to take another break here. We'll come back with our fourth and long segment discussing Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons completing their comeback over the New Orleans Saints, Philadelphia Eagles coming back against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and one playoff team that I believe is already in deep trouble after week one. And we're back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Going into our fourth and long segment here on the show, week one, let's get to it. Starting off with Matt Ryan, who led all quarterbacks with 448 passing yards against the New Orleans Saints, 31 of 43, 3 touchdowns. My statement, this is just the beginning of what will be Matt Ryan's best statistical year of his career. It's a big statement. I'm grunting. I'm agreeing. Look, he is set up to really have a tremendous year. And I'm not just saying this because he's on three of my fantasy teams. Julio Jones and Roddy White are both healthy. As long as they stay healthy, which I'm going to assume will happen this year. They hit some bad luck last season with that. They have two legitimate top wide receivers. Ryan will definitely miss Tony Gonzalez. But look at who else was catching passes on Sunday for the Falcons. Devin Hester, 5 catches, 99 yards. Harry Douglas has been a focal point, been a 3 wide receiver in that offense for a long time. He had 6 catches for 69 yards. Anton Smith, 1 catch. Man, is that guy fast. He caught that screen pass and boom, went down the field, 54-yard touchdown. And tight end Levin Toyolo caught a touchdown in his first start, replacing Tony Gonzalez. So the running game will be a question mark all season long. And the defense for the Falcons is going to be a question mark all season long. But for that reason, I like what the Falcons can do, or what specifically what Matt Ryan can do throwing the ball. He is going to have plenty of pass attempts. I mean, he had 43 on Sunday against the Saints, and that's what he is weekly going to have to do for the Falcons to win games. I'm not saying he's going to win enough games to go to the playoffs or make a splash in the NFC or anything like that, but statistically, he's going to put up a lot of yards and complete a lot of passes and throw a lot of touchdowns. He'll throw some picks too, but he's going to throw a lot of yards and touchdowns as well. The Philadelphia Eagles completed their comeback over the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jaguars score the first 17 points of the game, only to see Philadelphia score the last 34 points of the game to win 34-17. My statement, this is just what the Eagles needed in their matchup in week one against the Jaguars. I'm grunting here too, and I know that's kind of a weird statement, but a lot of people had Philadelphia advancing very far in the playoffs. I had them advancing far in the playoffs. I still believe they're a championship caliber team. They can go to the NFC Championship this season. But they have some weak points on that team still. And getting knocked down a peg while still winning is the sign of a great football team. Chip Kelly and company can walk into that locker room after the game and say, yeah, okay, we didn't have the first half we wanted. We didn't play particularly well at home against an inferior opponent, somebody that is going to be close to the bottom of the league, the bottom of their own division. But hey, we didn't play all that well. We came back, and we still won by 17. You can hang your hats on that. Nick Foles this season is going to turn the ball over. I mean, he did it twice on Sunday. So that to me is not a problem. The problem I can see is the Eagles getting too complacent and thinking that this division, the NFC East, is theirs already before preseason, and they're, you know, entitled to a playoff berth because of their run last year, and Nick Foles is just going to have another MVP season, not throw any interceptions or two or less in 10 starts again, and they'll be fine. That is by far, in a way, not the truth. Foles is going to turn the ball over. You know, this defense is going to give up some points, give up some yards. It doesn't mean they can't win. And it doesn't mean they can't get better as the season goes. I believe they will. But the game against the Jaguars, being able to win when you're not at your best, is always a good thing. The Kansas City Chiefs are the team that I believe are in the biggest trouble, playoff team at least, that is in the biggest trouble after week one. And that's my statement. I'm grunting on that. Lots of people might want to put the Patriots in that category. I think that's bogus. We all know what Bill Belichick and Tom Brady can do. We've seen them lose in Miami before. It wasn't a road game. It was a road game. It wasn't a home game. It wasn't a team that was completely awful. The Dolphins have some talented guys. So Patriots don't belong in this conversation. The Chiefs lost to a team at home at a place that's supposed to be extremely difficult to play in, and lost to a team that was 6-10 last year. It is very clear that Dwayne Bowe is really the only receiver that Alex Smith has. Bowe did not play because of a suspension on Sunday. And with no receiving game, that left Jamaal Charles completely ineffective. And he was abandoned by Andy Reid, which I don't understand. And if I was a Charles fantasy owner, I would be greatly concerned. 7 carries for 19 yards for who probably went number 2 in most fantasy drafts, a top 3 player overall. He gets 19 yards week 1 against the Titans at home? Are you kidding? Again, the Chiefs did not play well. They couldn't do anything on offense because they have no passing game. But the fact that Reed only ran him seven times, when Alex Smith got 6 carries and ran for 36 yards and was the Chiefs' leading rusher, that is not a good thing. On top of the woes on offense, all-pro caliber inside linebacker Derek Johnson is likely out for the season with a torn Achilles. That is going to knock the Chiefs' defense down quite a bit. Which was not the same defense with a couple of injuries at the end of last season. And the icing on the cake for me and why the Chiefs are in trouble in terms of getting back to the playoffs this year, I took a look at their schedule. Upcoming this season, they have the Seahawks, luckily at home, but they play the entire NFC West division, which means they have the Seahawks. They go on the road at San Francisco, at Arizona. They play Denver twice, of course, San Diego and Oakland twice, all 3 of those teams twice. They're at Miami, who was impressive against New England. They go to they're home against New England. And then the second to the last week of the season, they're at Pittsburgh. That is not a cakewalk schedule, which is what they had last season on their way to an 11-5 mark. So the Chiefs are my team that, even after just one game, I can say are definitely in some big doo-doo. I'm going to apologize for not mentioning the other 6 winners or losers in the NFL on Sunday. As you can see, we're running short on time, and I want to get you out on a timely manner. But those scores, I will announce the Minnesota Vikings thrashing the St. Louis Rams, who have already benched their backup quarterback, Sean Hill. The Vikings winning that one 34-6. The New York Jets, big win at home against the Oakland Raiders, 19-14. Houston already has half the amount of wins they had last year, beating Washington 17-6. Miami, I've mentioned a couple of times, did beat the Patriots 33-20. Carolina, no Cam Newton, no problem. They beat Tampa Bay 20-14. And what was supposed to be America's Game of the Week on Fox was anything but that, with San Francisco pretty much thrashing the Dallas Cowboys 28-17. It was not nearly as close as that score would indicate. We're going to go back to the Proclaimer song, I'm Gonna Be. There are other songs on that album, but I'm going to be is clearly the best piece of music on that album. So I have taken the liberty of playing that song three times for you today. Enjoy one more part of I'm Going to Be 500 Miles, and then we'll come back and wrap up today's show. And we're back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle, your host, Dave Holcomb. Once again, I want to remind you, we want to make you a part of the show. Give me a tweet, DM, HOLCOMB, send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. If those two avenues of communication do not work for you, I also have a Facebook, search Dave's Football News. I want to leave you with a couple of articles up on the site that I want you to check out this week. One entitled Five Things We Learned from the Jaguars and Eagles Game, written by Dave Levin, who we always reference here, great writer up on the site. And Cody Parker's Could This Be Peyton Manning's Last Chance at a Super Bowl? So please go check out those articles and all of the other articles that will be pouring out on Monday and Tuesday and the next couple of days, really, on week one of the NFL. Previewing week two, and then even college football as well. So until next week, I'm going to go try and find some peace in my mind.